This podcast was produced Wednesday, September 17th at 3 o'clock p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like people will stop comparing their political opponents to Hitler and fascists. That would be a start towards more civility. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics. And all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who never let a crisis go to waste. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, how do you guarantee a Snollygoster of the Week award? Compare your opponents to Hitler. But first, it has been more than a week since an assassin shot and killed conservative activist Charlie Kirk in Utah. Memorials for Kirk continued, as do near universal denunciations of the murder. The alleged killer, 22-year-old Tyler Robinson, appeared for his court hearing. Prosecutors produced evidence the killing was politically motivated. President Trump, Vice President Vance, they have implied that the violence was the result of far-left rhetoric, and they promised to crack down on liberal groups. To reflect more on why this happened and where we go from here, we turn to a panel of political observers. They are Signal statewide politics reporter Andrew Tobias, Democratic strategist Stanley Gates, and former state legislator and Republican Gene Krebs. Gene Krebs, after one of these incidents, there's always calls for more civility. We need to lower the temperature. We need to stop yelling at each other and calling each other names. And it goes away. Does it last this time?
I wish I could be the irrational optimist you're hoping for. This country has a problem, and that is, okay, Lincoln was shot, Garfield, McKinley, Harry Truman, Manny almost got shot by Puerto Rican separatists. Then you go to the 1960s, a lot of assassinations. There's something wrong in how we decide or make our decisions that ends up with too much conflict occurring between the parties. We lack some means. I'll give you an example. Great Britain has had one prime minister assassinated ever. Okay? This is unheard of in Europe. Just doesn't happen in other democratic republics.
Stanley, does the bold nature of this assassination at a rally, caught by camera in front of 3,000 people, the person who was killed, Charlie Kirk being a lightning rod, does that amp up the anger?
I think so, absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, at this point, there's a lot of turns of the tide, right? You have historically black colleges where I am a graduate of Howard University that have been on lockdown. They have to cancel classes as well. You think about it and you see what's happening and you realize that, we need to make sure that we're putting down the guns. We need to have regular conversation with folks. We need to be able to be open to open communication and make sure that this thing doesn't happen again. I mean, the country right now is at a fork in the road. I think about, the historically black colleges that I mentioned that are under attack, getting threats, but I also think of even, the Malcolms, the Martins that were assassinated as well for their opinions. And so we need to make sure that we're having open conversation with folks, be able to hear the other side, but then also make sure that any disagreements we have, we handle that in the civil way as well.
The forum for disagreements, Andrew, is social media. And the governor of Utah today called it a cancer. How much of that can we blame on this?
Truly, I think it plays a big role in political polarization. This is something that I am intentional about as a professional journalist. I think about the way that I talk about things. I don't know that that's true of 80% of social media users. I watched how this unfolded. People say that the video itself, which got shared, this horrible shooting, that kind of thing contributes to political polarization. So I hadn't seen the Utah governor's comments, but I think that's a pretty apt, criticism and explanation of, or at least in part of what's happening here.
Could this stifle free speech, especially on a college campus? I mean, in 2017, OSU denied Richard Spencer, white supremacist, permission to speak on campus because they were worried about security, and they said it was a danger to public safety, and they denied him permission to speak on campus. He sued, and they dropped the case, but you can see that who would have somebody like a Charlie Kirk on campus now?
Well, yes, except that the right for free speech is, according to the recent rulings of the Supreme Court, including the Roberts Court, pretty darn well near absolute. But I want to go back to one more thing that your audience has heard me say before. This is the only country that settled the issue of slavery via a civil war. Everybody else was able to do it through legislative means, imperial edicts, things of that nature. Once again, I think we need to do some deep discussions amongst ourselves to find out what is it about how we are constructed that leads us to this inability to constructively come up with this dialogue and instead divide up into factions so easily here. There's something wrong.
I mean, given that history, Stanley, I mean, I don't have a whole lot of hope. It goes back 200 years.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue it goes further than 200 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the root of the founding of this country is just the epitome of making sure that folks were not able to agree, whether it's class, whether it's race. And we're seeing that unfold right now. I mentioned the Malcolms and the Martins, as Gene mentioned, some of the presidents, too. And, you know, that's the history of this country. And so, unfortunately, you know, I have some... thoughts that I don't think, you know, that we're going to get there, unfortunately. I hope that we can have more conversation and be able to have that dialogue. But, you know, the Europeans have figured this out, as Gene mentioned as well. And, you know, we need to do that as well.
We are getting closer to a campaign season, a more intense campaign season, race for governor. Amy Acton is running for governor. She faced death threats and had people on her front lawn with guns. Vivek Ramaswamy is a very robust speaker. He's not quite as out there as Charlie Kirk was, but he's a powerful force, Doge, big Trump supporter. How do these campaigns change, do you think, Andrew?
With both of those candidates, I'm going to be optimistic at this moment that they'll be responsible with the things that they say. It's hard to anticipate where our country is going to be a year from now. I wouldn't have predicted something like this 2 years ago or a year ago. So hopefully that's the case, that they'll have a measured tone. I mean, they will be talking about state government issues, which don't tend to be as hot button as some of the other things out there. But it's really hard to say. But like I said, I'm going to choose to be optimistic right now, especially with who the candidates are.
I'm going to push back just a little bit. I know of a city council person in Vandalia who gets threats almost every week. I mean, we're talking here a local medium-sized, small-sized city. So I think it's out there. I just don't think that the media is necessarily aware of it. But yeah, so it goes on.
I'd even argue too, though. I mean, it's also on the leaders to make sure that they're calling this down and saying that this is not appropriate and this is not who we are. I mean, you know, when folks come out and immediately address it and not try to add to the fuel to the fire, I mean, I think that that's important, and a lot of folks need to do that more.
Yeah, in the immediate aftermath, I think there was that. Now we'll see what happens. Week one, week two, week three, especially as we learn more about the motivation of the shooter, which apparently it was, early indications are there were politics involved.
Yes, politics were involved, but also early indications are that the suspected gunman planned the shooting and carried it out alone. We'll be right back.
It's rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
With the first of several deadlines approaching, Ohio Democrats have taken the first stand in the upcoming redistricting process. Democrats have unveiled their map. Under their plan, Ohio's 15 congressional districts, in theory, would be more balanced than they are now. Historic voting patterns indicate Republicans would be favored in 8 districts, Democrats favored in 7. Currently, 10 Republicans and 5 Democrats represent Ohio. And there is speculation that Republican maps will try to win at least 2 more seats for Republican candidates during this process.
Stanley Gates, I talked to Minority Leader Danny Isaacson. He said this map he thinks it fairly represents Ohio, and it has competitive districts where, depending on the year, Republicans and Democrats could swing some of those. But is this going to be anything like what we see when this is all over?
You know, I doubt it. But I'm optimistic because I think, you know, when you look at what happened several years ago, the Democrats are on a united front. The Democrats have come together, Senate and also House, to release this map. We didn't see that the last time. And so I like that they're early. I like that they're doing this and making sure that folks know, while also making sure that the speaker knows, too. And I also know that the speaker has already said that that's not going to fly. But, you know, I think that this is a really good effort. I mean, across the country, locally, and also on the state level, too, we don't see this a lot from our Democratic colleagues. And so I'm happy that they have come out early. They said this is what they want, and they're going to make sure that they stand for it. I think this is going to drag on and be a very long fight, but I'm very happy to see that they've come together, and I hope that, you know, down the road that this will actually help, because at the end of the day, this is about the constituents and making sure that we are able to get what we need. But I do think that Democrats should have an additional seat in the congressional legislature so that we can make sure that things are more fair.
So now come to the point in the show where I beat, like a rented mule, the Ohio Democratic Party. Okay? In 2009, they were offered a fair deal. And they agreed to it initially. And then they said, oh, no, wait, we think we can run the table. They got greedy. Yeah. And so this whole thing I keep going back to is the just absolute mind-boggling ineptness of my opposition. And as the Bible says, iron sharpens iron. I want a good, worthy opponent, and I'm not getting it from the ODP. For them to now complain about this, I'm going, ha, go away.
Now, there have been so many maps that have been unveiled, Andrew, as you well know. In this process, are the Democrats, at least they got out early in this one, are they ahead of where they have been in the past fights? Does that make a difference?
I think probably what they're trying to do is either kickstart negotiations or highlight the fact that Republicans aren't negotiating with them. I actually don't read that much into what Matt Huffman says about these things because I just think the incentives are so clear because of the way the process works for them to wait until November when they'll be able to pass a map with no Democratic votes and not really take any of this stuff into consideration. But that kind of aside out there, Huffman responded to this by saying, well, we would like to negotiate behind closed doors, but it really isn't a great start when they're announcing this stuff in the media before they talk to us. So that's how he responded. It's kind of like a cat and mouse game. But I think that's, you know, we will probably see this month pass without a map being introduced. And I think that's what Democrats want to highlight by doing this.
Stanley, if you look at the six states of New England, there's not one Republican representative, not one congresswoman or man. And now, no, they're liberal, but it's at least 40% of those folks up there are conservative. So not those are gerrymandered districts. I mean, Vermont only has one seat, but still. Is it fair that Ohio should try to balance that in Congress? Ohio, Texas, now Missouri, apparently, just this week, voted to have a change one of the district's maps?
I think it is fair, personally. I think that, you know, when you look at this kind of thing and the way that Ohio has been shaped, we are very much a mixed state. And that's also the argument that's been made when folks are trying to push out Representative Capter and also even Sykes. And so I think for that reason, you should be fair. And I think that, you know, although those states are liberal-leaning and they're not having the same conversation, we're not like those states. We're not like Texas. We're not like Florida. We are Ohio, and I think that we have a responsibility to make sure that we have equal representation, fair representation in Congress.
This got shot down last year, Gene, the plan to fix the system overwhelmingly. And do voters care anymore? If Republicans go too far and try to go down to two Democratic districts in the state?
The voters, they won't. We insiders will know, and we will care immensely. But so just compare this to a little bit to Iowa. You know, Governor DeWine talked about copying what Iowa does. Iowa's 4% African American. We're 12%. And we have to have minority majority districts, okay? Under current court findings. However, those court findings are now in danger of being overturned at SCOTUS. So if that does happen, then we can then bring, because I looked at the Iowa plan in the 90s, and I thought this could work here, but for that issue. So if that gets overturned, we need something easily understood that the voters can intuitively understand. The problem with what the league brought forward last time, it was two steps too complicated.
It's always going to be complicated, though, right, Andrew? I mean, there's so many things you have to worry about, compactness and partisanship and minority districts. And
the Iowa plan, I think, is a little bit less goofy for that.
There's talk that if the Republicans wait until November and pass the bill, the redistricting map, with a simple majority, that it could end up on the ballot. Is that a legit plan that Democrats might have, put this issue back on the ballot? Because the voters can, if they collect enough signatures, put a recently passed law on the ballot for the voters to decide.
I think it's a viable strategy. The way I kind of view it is that it would have a high probability of keeping everything in court. There are timelines that these things have to meet. I forget exactly what the date is, but there's ballots have to be sent out. There's a candidate filing deadline. There's going to be a 90-day lag time for this bill to take effect. So there's going to be a time crunch if they pass this in November, like I think they will. And so something like that, you know, would just kind of add to the likelihood that it's going to get settled in court. And I think it's also, it could be a bargaining chip that Democrats could use, you know, as kind of like a last ditch thing. So, well, there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I do think that is a realistic option, at least even as a negotiating strategy.
Do you think Democrats, if the Republicans say we'll stop at four districts instead of going for three, limiting Democrats to three districts, we'll stop at four? Is there a compromise there? Would they go for it, or are they not going to compromise at all?
I don't think that they're going to compromise. I think with them coming out so early and also being aggressive and kind of saying what they want, I don't think that there's going to be any conversation for that kind of compromise. I think that Democrats have made it very clear that they want more seats, and I think that that is a fair request given the makeup and also the way that the state has voted in the past several elections as well.
Yeah. And the Republicans won't bend because this is being dictated by the White House.
That's right. Everything Republican must win President Trump's blessing, or at least fly under President Trump's radar. Thanks to our panel of experts this week, Signal's statewide politics reporter Andrew Tobias, Democratic strategist Stanley Gates, and former state legislator and Republican Gene Krebs. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. There was a fair amount of hypocrisy to spread around this week as political figures and pundits who champion free speech looked to shut it down if they didn't agree with it. And some responsible for pretty extreme positions have accused their opponents of fomenting extremism. It is the time we live in. But one example caught our eye. Ohio's U.S. Senator Bernie Moreno took to the floor of the U.S. Senate to passionately denounce people who compare others to Nazis, pointing to some who compared Charlie Kirk to a Nazi or a fascist. But it was Moreno himself, in April, just this past April, who compared his opponent, Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer, to Hitler. Moreno said, quote, "Democrats are monolithic sheep that follow Fuhrer Schumer's orders." Keep in mind, Chuck Schumer is Jewish. Pot, meat kettle. For that, Bernie Moreno gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. And longtime listeners to this podcast will remember a key Snollygoster rule. Don't compare anything to Nazi Germany, and don't compare anyone to Hitler. It's just not accurate, and it makes the person who makes the comparison look bad. Remember that rule. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are part of the NPR network. As always, please to be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. And the best way to spread the word about this podcast is to tell your friends about it. That's our most effective marketing. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.